Dodgers. On this motherfucking ballpark. Times are strange. We got a free upgrade for Dodgers. Ballpark. Fuck 'em, I don't care. Pop the cheap champagne. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwintelligence Podcast. I'm H.J. Preller, taping live at H.J. Manor, and joined, not all, as always, but possibly in the future, as always, by none other than Padres Twitter star Corey Stewart.
Padres Twitter star, huh? I don't know about that.
I mean, how's it feel to be taping here in the fresh air of coastal North County? I know you had to.
You mean cross no methane cloud? Is what you're saying?
I know you had to cross over the pass at Dank. I think it's Dank Tank is the name of the mountain.
Dank Tank. It feels great, actually. Yeah.
Yes, totally clearing up.
Yeah.
Good for the respiratory system.
Right. 100%. 100%. Yeah.
It must be weird to have this kind of sea air, which is very well known to help people.
We're right on the beach, basically.
Yeah.
Basically. Right on the beach. Right on the beach.
Well, welcome. There's major work being done here at H.A. Manor, so there may be construction noise.
Yes, there is.
But there's been a lot in Padres land also, right? What are we, 2 games under .500 as of today?
Yes. Yeah. After losing 2 to the lowly San Francisco Giants.
Awful Giants. In front of literally hundreds of people at their stadium.
Boy, those crowds, they really dipped, didn't they?
Yeah. It feels good that we can dunk on a team for having small weeknight crowds.
Right, yeah. Oh, I mean, they've been giving us crap for years about, oh, yes, we sell out. Well, you're winning every single year.
Yeah.
When you win 3 World Series titles in, what was it, 6 years? Now?
3-5.
3-5, that's right, yeah. Yeah, and now
even years, remember?
And now it's empty. And that ballpark, by the way, I love that ballpark.
Do you love it?
I do.
I have mixed feelings on their ballpark.
Why is that?
A lot of it is closed off to the public. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but do you remember when Petco Park first opened? Toyota Terrace was not open to the public. You had to actually have a ticket in Toyota Terrace to even walk the concourse there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And a few years later, they opened it up because they were like, well, no one's going to this bar that we built. And it was a big deal to get Toyota Terrace tickets. And I think that's how a lot of whatever it is, Oracle Park, right?
Is that what it's called now?
I think.
I don't know. It's been changed three times.
I think Seattle. I don't know. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I can't keep up with them now.
But I remember I walked in from the city and immediately you're faced with this Virgin America escalator. Which probably isn't there because Virgin America doesn't exist anymore. But it was an escalator. You needed a special ticket to get onto that level. And this wasn't the dugout club. It was just a level in the stadium. And so, when I go to another stadium, I'm sure you're the same. You want to take a walk.
Explore.
Do a lap.
Yeah.
And you can do a full lap on the main concourse that takes you, out to that, the center field outdoor food area.
Okay.
But you can't walk some of the upper levels. And I don't care for that.
I've been really lucky with getting great tickets when I've been up there for pretty cheap, actually. And then my other thing is I just always do the act like I know where I'm supposed to be going and just go wherever I want. And especially because usually I'm on the road, so I'm going solo to these games. So it's super easy just to go wherever the hell I want.
I, too, travel solo a lot.
Yeah.
And you make a good point. If it looks like you belong... Service workers don't want to hassle the guy who looks like they belong.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so you just, you just cruise by and say hello, you're friendly with everybody and and you can get away with pretty much anything.
You and I have both penetrated a Washington D.C. baseball stadium, different stadiums, but the key to that was gaining elevator access, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
As many people know, I don't know if you had an elevator attendant when you got in. I did. But if you act like, if you don't walk in the elevator and are like, hey, the clubhouse, is that on level double L? Can you push that one?
Yeah.
That's when they ask questions. But if you just walk in and confidently say something, worst case, you get out, right? And then you figure it out.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, or you just, you blend in with a group.
Yeah.
And just, you look like, oh, I'm with these four or whatever.
They're not going to arrest you.
No, exactly.
Because that's when you pull the, I'm a confused tourist and there's no signs here.
100%, yeah.
It's your fault, not mine.
It's like, oh, no, you're not supposed to be here. You're supposed, oh, I'm really, really sorry. And then you just go find another escalator or whatever. And you go up in that. And then it works that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Trust me, I do it all. I was just doing it last week when I went to Arlington. I was all over that ballpark. I just whatever I wanted to do. But I had a great ticket though for that one though, because I mean it's the Rangers and the Orioles. Nobody gave a crap. The weather was bad, and I found a literally front row behind the dish, just off to the left a little bit at the on deck circle for it was. I think $80 or something like that. I mean, it was a great seat.
Did you see George W?
I did not.
He goes to a lot of games.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I didn't see him, though. He doesn't even want to see the Orioles.
I had the luck of going at a game where he was there behind home plate, and it actually made the newspapers because his Secret Service agents caught a foul ball that was coming right for him and saved him. It was very exciting.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
with glove or no?
Speaking of disgraced public figures like George W. Bush.
Oh, we're going to talk about Andy Green now?
Let's get on Andy Green, the hot topic. I think you and I have, over the years, probably expressed our feelings on Andy Green's performance and potential.
I'll be honest. I didn't like the hire at the beginning. I mean, I was hoping. It's like, oh, wow, maybe this guy's some genius that they know much more about than we do, and he's going to come in here. And I like fresh faces coming in instead of the retread.
Ron Gardenhire was the name that came out of.
Oh, yeah. So I just didn't love it at the beginning, and I didn't understand the experience level and things like that.
Because historically, keep in mind that at that time, okay, we were just coming off the 2015 season. Most of that team was still here, with the exception of Kimbrel, right, when that 2016 season started. 2016, if you listen to the team and the owner and the GM and everyone, that was supposed to be a playoff push year again, like 2015.
Oof.
And they brought in a guy with no experience and no demonstrated skill at leading those players. You just came off a situation with a half season of Pat Murphy with veterans, right, that didn't respect him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the experience. Pat Murphy had way more minor league
experience than Andy did.
And really, career-wise, had much more success at the college level, at least. And so it was a little curious at the time that they chose a total outsider with no experience and keeping all the veterans in-house. I mean,
yeah,
it didn't make sense at the time.
No. I wasn't the only one. Everyone was like, who?
But then,
who is this guy?
But then at the press conference, they were like, he's so well-spoken.
Yeah.
He's so intelligent. Did you hear him at the press conference?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And now all of the qualities that people said were so great in that press conference are basically the qualities that we hate.
Yeah.
The shifty eyes, the dismissiveness of questions, the ability to... A lot of times I ask this question, what is Andy Green good at, right? No one ever has any answers related to his job performance, but
no.
I will say the one thing he's really good at is killing the clock.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, if you ask him a question, we heard this on the Ben and Wood show this week, right?
Right.
They ask him a simple question. He goes way off course and then at the very end addresses it very briefly, all the while killing 2 of the 10 minutes that the team has promised him for to the radio station.
Right, yeah. Oh, I mean, you and I are we're two of the ones who actually... I know that there's others, but I know that you and I are definitely two that watch till the end of the game and then wait for those guys to get through the 5 minutes or whatever of the post-game show, and then it's like, okay, here's Andy Green. I wait for that every single time.
It's arguably the best part.
It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
His answers are the same
yes.
every night.
Yeah.
They never change.
Right.
They're never satisfying. They're never good.
Yeah.
But they kill enough time. Like, I don't know how it works. I assume that he's made available for a certain amount of time for these, probably contractually, to show up there.
Yeah, and I don't think we don't get all of it, obviously, right?
I don't think so, because stuff gets reported, quotes and stuff that are not in that segment.
Right, yeah. They only give us usually, like, I don't know,
3 minutes.
Three, four minutes.
Big happens, and then we get 4 minutes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Actually, I feel like we get more time after a win than we do after a loss when something bad happens. You know? It seems...
In case Bernie Wilson asks an unauthorized question that might ignite the fan base.
Bernie will... Bernie definitely gets in some... He definitely gets in some good ones.
Well, yeah. That's actually the fun sport also, is identifying who the answers are and then grading them on how much of a softball it was.
Right, yeah. I noticed that AC will... With the he has a real issue with base running blunders.
Yes.
And he'll really push on that. Other stuff, obviously, not so much. But like that's one of his real pet peeves, and he'll continue to pepper him about it because he's done it with Kinsler a couple times this year.
He's actually the only he's the only one that's really pushed on those
base right run. Exactly
there's
yeah
so many to count I can't even recount all of them.
But like the other night when. They had the issue in the bullpen where Trey was just getting absolutely lit up like a Christmas tree out there, and obviously something went wrong with, I don't know if Andy told someone, hey, we need to get the bullpen going, and they didn't get the bullpen. But I there was obviously some kind of a miscommunication because we saw it with our own eyes with the video. I mean, he's looking over, Ballsy's looking over, and it's like, oh my
god. And then shrug. And then they're, I think at one point.
And then they're running, and then Diaz jumps up and he starts warming up really quick, and afterwards, so they I think Scanlon had the first couple questions, and they were whatever, and then there was a long pause, and then I'm pretty sure it was AC, and AC was like, you know, did you think about going to the bullpen a little bit earlier when Trey was struggling? But he didn't. So Andy did one of his answers that are all over the place and don't really totally answer the question. It was kind of baffling, actually. And then they cut it off. So I don't know if they pushed him more and went, well, what was the confusion? What, you know, was there some kind of a communication issue or something like that, but I never heard it. At least it wasn't on that portion of the post game. So,
what did you think of that sequence? I mean, do you think he should have had someone up?
Yeah, 100%. And the only reason I say that, well, there's a couple reasons. Number one, obviously Monday was an off day, but we all remember what happened on Sunday,
right?
With Stammen, and I mean Stammen has had bright spots, and he's obviously had some not so bright spots. But I just don't know how a reliever gets lit up for four home runs. That's a single after that, right?
Yes.
That, you give,
that was
still
the
give
single was what the final blow was.
Yeah, it was just incredible. Yeah. So, and like I said, and then there's also Trey has not been good lately. Trey has had, I can't remember the last time Trey had a clean inning. So when you're bringing him in and knowing how you got roasted for what you did on Sunday, as soon as he gives up a hit, or he gave up a walk and then he gave up a hit.
Yes.
As soon as he gives up the walk and the hit, somebody should have been up. And instead, they weren't because up until he gave
what
up.
What was it at that time? It was a one-run game?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it walk, hit, and then the next one was, the sharp line out to Hunter. Somebody should have been up. And so I don't know whose fault that was, but it always falls to the manager, and that, whether that's fair or not, but it's true.
But that's kind of what happens when you're a manager, right?
Right.
The buck stops at you.
Bucks, 100%. 100%.
I'll tell you the truth. The bullpen stuff doesn't, it's annoying, and it was probably the wrong play, but to me, that's not the most objectionable thing that could have happened. I mean, he's given those players, right?
Right.
Winchester's walking almost six people per nine. Like, he walks people. The last two outings, he's put runners on. Like, this is actually, I'll talk about it in a little bit when we talk about, like, possible trades, but, like, a lot of people are like, well, we can trade Yates because Winchester will just pop in there as a closer. Have you seen his stuff? He throws really fast. But, like, the thing you don't want from a closer is someone who puts people on base, right?
Right.
And if you walk six per nine, that's not a good closer. Like, you're going to lose with that.
That's true.
Because they come in close games, and if you're putting runners on, that's how you lose those games and blow those saves.
That's exactly what Stock was doing, and they sent Stock right to... I mean, they chipped his ass right out.
Yeah.
But Trey continues to do it, and there's been...
Nothing.
Nothing.
So, I mean, who do they have to call up? Like, they got Munoz, who everyone's excited about and who I'm excited about, but he also walks 6 per 9.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, at this point, people are just looking for fresh faces. Like, I was so happy that Stock came back, and I know he went down, worked on it, and it apparently is better. So I was really excited. I was hoping we were going to see him last night. Instead, it was like, nope, you're going to get Erlen. And
now I'm with you. Like, if it was me, and it was a one-run game, right? I don't recall what the righty-lefty matchups were.
Right, I don't either. No.
But I would probably have someone up in case there was a left, you know, having those, you know, some left-handed reliever up or something. Like, I'd probably have someone going.
Just to have the option.
Just in case, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. What does it hurt?
But, so to me, that's a mistake, but it wasn't the biggest mistake. To me, the most egregious mistake that he made was leaving Franmil Reyes on the bench.
Oh.
Down to runner on base, the perfect position to bring Franmil Reyes up. Your just biggest power threat that you have on the team.
Wait, no, that was the first game, so we were only down by one because remember Kinsler hit the home run.
Oh, you're right.
So we were down by one, and then we started the inning with Hedges hitting.
Mm. And we have another catcher on the bench.
Right. Yeah,
you could have easily pinch hit for him.
Yes, 100%. And the way he said, I was going to say hitting, but he's not hitting. You have to,
right?
And Franmil killed. Yeah, I know he did not have a good game last night at all.
But it doesn't matter.
Like, but his numbers are good there at that park.
He's the biggest power threat we've had since 1998.
Yeah, he can obviously at any time can just drill one.
And to leave him on the bench is just is criminal.
Never got an at bat.
Right.
Yeah.
So with Andy Green in general, like, I don't like him. I don't enjoy watching him at all. Like, hearing his voice and watching him speak is excruciating for me.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I could look past, right?
If he
was making the right decisions.
Yeah.
And you know, Marver's big thing has always been, well, he played Perella. He made those decisions. I have a tendency to believe that Andy is partially, if not all, responsible for choices in the lineup. And there's always this myth that you'll see, like, Pelé and some other people say it. Like, they're like the Dodgers. They just pass the lineup to him. But every person in the media that's ever been asked about that has said that Andy makes the lineup, that there are suggestions made, but that he makes the ultimate lineup each day. He is empowered to do that.
Right.
Like, does anyone think the spreadsheet spits out Ian Kinsler at leadoff 25 times this year? Like, I guarantee there is no projection system that results in that lineup.
So the talk is that they all sit down, he sits down with his coaches and takes all the information that they have and takes the suggestions, but ultimately he's the one who puts it together. That's
like any management situation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, the Kinsler thing, I mean, we've seen, and his numbers at the top of the order are
very bad.
Incredibly bad.
Did you see that stat in Tatis's first game back where he got on base in the first inning out of leadoff? I think it was his first game back. And that was like the first time someone in the leadoff position had gotten on base in the first inning.
Yeah. Right.
In like 20 days, 30, yeah. 25 days or something.
Right. Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Andy Green, to me, I think that it always gets characterized as, well, Andy just doesn't have the bullets right now, right? He doesn't have the guys. We can't possibly judge him until he's got a full team. How much more do we need to add to the team to be able to start making judgments on specific decisions? Because, at least for me, I've never complained that the team had a losing record the last 3 years. I mean, I've probably complained, but well, I understood what the reason was, and I never would have blamed the manager for the losing.
Right.
What I have seen is nitpicking and complaining over specific decision-making that I think is valid no matter who is on the team.
100%.
You stick 100%. Two more $300 million players on the team, the roster's better, but we can still look at the decision-making that he makes.
Yeah, right, 100%. I mean, if this were, I don't know, people have said it before, but if this is Philly or New York, he's getting killed on some of these things.
Yeah, let's be serious here.
Yeah.
They've added Manny Machado. They've added Eric Hosmer. They have two in the top 10 in National League home run hitters right now. They have Fernando Tatis, who would be like an all-star caliber player if he hadn't been injured.
Yeah.
Like, at what level can we start judging him, you know?
Yeah. What how loaded does the roster have to be?
How
before
many
it's like, okay,
highest paid free agents per year,
yeah,
do they need to sign to be able to say, yeah, Andy makes bad decisions?
Yeah.
And so the thing is, a lot of people are like, well, it's only a game in June. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, do you remember 2010? Do you remember 2007? Like, one more win during the season would have meant a pennant those years, or would have meant a playoff appearance those years.
A W is a W, no matter what month it's in.
And we're all assuming we're going to make the playoffs someday, right? And one of the playoffs is a one game wild card game. And like, to me, we're trying to we now have 4 years of data basically on Andy Green. I haven't seen anything that stands out as he's really good at that. Right?
Right.
I can't point to one thing on the field that he's really good at. Bud Black, for all of his deficiencies, everyone agreed he was really great at managing the bullpen and the pitching staff, which you would expect as a pitching coach that he would do that. We can nitpick a lot of his in-game decisions that sucked, and he maybe wasn't the right manager, but I can point to that and say Bud Black was good at that, right?
Yeah. Your point about the wild card being one game. If we were to make the wild card, and I'm not even saying this year or next year, if you go into that wild card game, what manager would you want on the bench? Andy Green, Bud Black, Bruce Bochy? Who would you want there? Is Andy just those three choices? Is Andy your first choice out of that?
No,
of
course not,
not at all.
Well,
I don't, and it's funny because there's so many people that are really attached to him and really defend him.
But why?
Why are they
all in the media?
That's the other thing. A lot of but there are also a lot of fans too that seem to. There's no connection here. He like you said, hasn't had the bullets. It's been bad for how many years? I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Let me throw some of these out. Some people say he. You know the clubhouse chemistry that we all love this year? Well, Andy Green's the manager. Do you think that Andy Green booked the limo bus on the off day to go out to Scarecrow Vineyards? Do you think he was the one who did that and was like, hey guys, I set up this trip for you so you guys can coalesce as a unit and build chemistry? You think Andy did that?
I
take that as a no.
That is a no. And the other thing, I don't like that he can't speak Spanish.
I think that's an issue, right?
Right. I mean, okay, so he was hired in 2015. You see what's coming down the pipeline, which is a lot of Dominican players, a lot of Mexican players. At some point, like,
at least
get some tapes.
Like, you can like,
maybe do some tapes
like
at night.
My five-year-old is in a Spanish class.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that difficult.
No.
It doesn't take up that much time.
Darren Smith was going to go travel to Spain, so he took lessons.
And I don't have 5 months off every year.
Yeah, during the off season, maybe learn a little bit of it.
Yeah,
that's why my I'm obviously Mr. Rod Barajas guy. I'm president of his fan club.
But if you're a construction foreman and your employees speak Spanish.
Right. Yes.
Shouldn't you kind of know how to communicate with them so they don't put the
I would love
the joist in the wrong place?
Yes. Yeah, like, right. Yes. I mean, and I know that there's obviously they get around that, obviously, but still, it would be cool if.
There's literally a cliche lost in translation.
Yeah. Right.
Because things get lost in translation.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned Barajas.
Yes.
Another thing I hear, and I should be clear, I don't care if they fire him now or fire him in the offseason.
Yeah.
But one thing I do hear is, well, there's all this evidence that you can't turn a team around by firing the manager in the middle of the season. Like, what's the point? I kind of agree with that premise, but I would also say that in 2015 when they fired Bud Black, not that that was an advisable move or the best move, but it gave the team basically half a season to evaluate Pat Murphy, someone who they actively fought to retain at the time,
right?
Because someone tried to hire him away before then,
yeah.
And they basically made him like a manager in waiting in a way,
yeah, right.
But they learned enough in that 3 month period to know he's not the guy, which has as much value as finding out someone is the guy. And so with Barajas, let's say they do bring him on, regardless of what the resulting record, like with Pat Murphy, their issues weren't necessarily the record. I mean, that was part of it, but they learned a lot about his handling of the media. His ability to be quiet on certain things. Because if you remember how they would make him be chaperoned when they did an injury report or anything?
Oh, I don't remember that.
he revealed something, I think, on Darren's show. He was the best guest ever on the Darren Smith
he
show.
Was so good on Darren Smith.
He had no filter. He was the best. Which you can see why they hated him so much. But at one point, I think he revealed something, some kind of injury issue.
Okay.
And from then on, like AJ or someone else had to literally sit with him when he had press meet and greets after that. Like, the thing is, they learned that, right? They wouldn't have learned that. If they kept Bud the whole year and then fired him, they're like, well, we got Pat, and he's real great in El Paso, and he knows all the guys. And then you commit a year to him, right? Because
but at least,
because you know when a new manager comes in, even if the team's bad, the excuse is, well, the guys are still learning the system of the new manager.
He's not going to get 1 year.
We got to give it time, and you got to have continuity, right?
Nobody's going to fire him here after 1 year.
Right.
Yeah.
You can learn a lot in half a season.
100%.
And for me, I know you're very pro Barajas. For me, I don't know. I don't know that much about the guy. I know he speaks Spanish. I know he played, and I know he's a catcher.
And he did well, obviously, at El Paso.
AAA. Yeah. But so did Pat Murphy.
Yeah. What? True. Very true. And the other thing I like about with the El Paso is that he had obviously has a good relationship with some of the players that were there. Which I think
so
is important.
Pat.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So maybe he's not the guy. Yeah. So maybe he's not the guy. But if you were to give him today is the 12th or the 13th or whatever. If you get to give him the rest of the season, that's you're right. There's a lot to learn there. And maybe he's not the guy. And then maybe you go get your Girardi or whatever, but you know what?
I don't know if that's the right guy. People just say it because he has a World Series.
Because he has a World Series ring. And how much is he going to cost?
It's not my money.
No, it's not mine either. I don't care. If we hire a manager that I know is going to win us a World Series, I don't care if they pay him $15 million a year. I don't care at all. However, when have they ever gone out and spent serious money on a manager? It never, right? Ever. So I don't. And now this is a new ownership group. Obviously, maybe they would, but I think Girardi's going to cost a lot of money, and I don't know how open they're going to be about doing that. And what do they owe Andy? Like, if they were to fire Andy,
I heard he's one of the lowest paid managers in baseball.
And but what does he have left on the contract though? I can't.
Well, remember when they snuck out like an extension
that was totally unnecessary?
Like usually you wait till they have a year left or whatever, and then you do it.
What was the point of that?
They snuck it out at like 8 in the morning one Sunday, I think.
It's so strange. Like somebody's going to be swooping in on
Andy? Like, come on.
But I would love to see Rod just get the rest of the season. What could it hurt?
Yeah, worst case you dismiss him, right?
Right. Yeah.
Send him back to AAA.
At the end of
cuz I think I think he's from El Paso. So like
oh yeah, oh okay.
So
yeah.
You send him back home. He's fine.
There you go. Right.
I mean,
or somebody else grabs him.
A mark of a weak organization is one that has a manager or coach in waiting and they just hand it over to them. Like competition usually drives excellence. That's like a tenet of just successful people. And if you just hand it off to someone, then you've taken competition completely out of it, which makes the person you've selected in waiting weaker because they didn't have to hone themselves or hone their skills or whatever. They didn't have to earn it. Really.
Right.
I mean, they earn it in a way by just being there. And then also, it gives you an opportunity to see what else is out there, right? Like, the Padres in their position should be hiring the best available manager. And the only way to do that is to do a real search for it.
Right. I agree.
I'm also going to add that Mike D hired Andy Green, which is not a great, which is a real black mark on him.
Yes, it is.
So, let's see. If it was up to us, is Andy Green fired now, off season, or never? Manager for life.
I think what makes most sense is right now, and then so you can look at Barajas, and then at the end of the season, you can still go out and look at other options. You just you don't name a manager; you name an interim manager, and at the end of the year, then you can bring in other people and let him know ahead of time. Look, Andy's gone. You're coming in. You're going to get an opportunity which the other candidates that we're going to interview at the end of the season are not going to get. You get to come in here and show us what you can do. Mm-hmm. They won't get that opportunity, but you do. And then at the end of the year, we're going to sit down with a couple other guys and you and figure out who we want to go forward with this franchise. There's nothing wrong with that.
Just collecting data.
Right.
That's what
and I think smart
organizations do.
Rod's not going to love the opportunity. Of course you are.
Right.
Yeah. So
I'm with you. Like, all things being equal, I don't know how much worse the record would have to be to trigger this. This is actually an interesting thing. I don't know how much you've looked at the 2015 Padres. and the progression of their season. But similar to this year, where the Padres started 11-5, the 2015 Padres started 10-5, right? And do you remember how excited everyone was? Because this was supposed to be our playoff team.
Okay.
The team actually hovered at or above 500 for most of the beginning of the season until June 13th, which is what, tomorrow? Yes. June 13th is the point that the 2015...
Oh, no, today's June 13th.
June 13th is the date that the 2015 Padres never saw 500 again. That's when they fell behind they fell one game below, and they never saw it again. It's possible, right, that as we are now, that date for this team was June 11th, right?
Oh, with the start of the Giants series.
It's like, if you actually look at if you pull up the schedule and results for both years, it's remarkably similar, the ebbs and flows that both teams had and how aligned they were date-wise. It's almost eerie, actually. And so it makes me wonder how much more losing... They pulled the trigger on Bud Black very quickly from the point after they permanently fell below 500. What point and what record do you think it would take for the team to start considering firing Andy?
Well, last night with the second loss in San Francisco, which was just incredibly disappointing because they're so bad. That's such a bad, bad baseball team. Their bullpen's okay, but it's just not a good baseball team.
Their lineup is atrocious.
It really is.
They're not even playing Brandon Belt in the first game.
I was thinking as a Giants fan, if you're looking at Panda at first, that just must be awful. That's like looking at Kinsler at second, or Perella at getting 150
games. There was a key play in the first game. Do you remember Panda got on base, and I forget who hit behind him, but they hit a double. It would have been a double, but Renfroth had an amazing throw to second.
Oh yes,
threw him out.
Yeah,
and Panda couldn't score
from
first. Right. Like, he barely made it to third in time.
What is the point of playing that guy?
Any other player would have scored a critical run at that point.
Yeah,
and
this season for them is just a complete throwaway season. There's really no one that they have in the minors that they should be giving at bats to.
No, all their best minor leaguers are like 18 and 9. Like, they have good players. They're just really young.
They're just super, super, super young. Okay, all right. Yeah, I was looking at him going like, that's. To see him trot out every day would just kill me. It would. There's just no use to it at all. Yeah. So anyway, so it was super disappointing to lose both of those games there. And now I'm scared to death going into Colorado. And so my thought process was, we lose these two in San Francisco to a terrible team. If we get swept in Colorado, is that enough that they would go, okay, this is bad?
I don't think they do it on the spot.
You don't think so?
No. The thing is...
So they give them the Milwaukee series after?
It looks bad when you fire someone that you hired.
Oh,
right?
Oh.
There is some built-in stickiness to having him, because Fowler and AJ have put their names behind not only hiring him but extending him. Right? This is kind of the thing with Will Myers, right? And it's why his legs here are going to be really long, because AJ put himself on the line to give him $80 million, right?
Right.
And so you give the same thing with Brian Mitchell. We've seen it from him that he is affected by, kind of the sunk cost thing.
Saying you're wrong.
Andy's a sunk cost in a way, right?
Yeah, right.
And so there is going to be some tendency to say, I think he can pull out of it. I think he might be the guy. Because if you fire him, you admit that you made a mistake. Right?
And essentially that you wasted those years with the guy that isn't the guy.
I think, to be realistic, I think they'd have to be like 8 games under 500 by the All-Star break, which would be a real slide from here to there. That's not saying
six more games under fire.
But that's what I think it would take to kind of sound the alarms at Petco Park.
You don't think if they got swept in this Colorado series,
it'd be embarrassing, but I don't think they'd fire him.
Not fire him, but
it would add to
they the, would really to start going, argument. Okay, this yeah. we start really formulating the
depending
the
on
plan.
The blunders he makes, which are right, somewhat
that's
inevitable.
True. That's true. Yeah. I was looking at the starting rotation too for this coming up series as well. And like, Marg has the Sunday game, and Like, I mean, you know already.
Yeah.
That's going to be a disaster. And Matt hasn't been great lately. This could be a bad series.
Could be bad.
It could really be a bad series.
Paddock's gone. We don't even have our stopper. Like,
right. Yeah.
We're cooked.
Yeah. But with them, they're so weird. You know, they could whenever go in there and they could win cooked. 3 out of 4.
Yeah, whenever I think they're cooked, you know? Then Margavish throws a, you know, 4-year.
Like, yeah, right. He'll do something that's just like, what? What is this guy? Yeah. So
if I'm betting on what will happen, they'll keep him. If I'm betting what should happen, I'd dump him. I've seen enough to know that not that he's horrible, not that he's making the team. He's not necessarily the reason they have a losing record. He might be.
Right.
I can't definitively say that.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that when crunch time comes, if you truly believe that continuity is important, you want to take care of this earlier than later. I heard Woods tweeted me. I didn't realize he said it on the radio, but that they should have another year. We got to give Andy another year. The thing is, everyone thinks next year is the year, right?
Wait, oh, so we have to give him 2020 as well?
This year and next year to really make a decision. And so my thing is, if you really believe in continuity, which Woods has cited before, I know, you don't want to fire the guy in the middle of the competitive window. You should do that before and start building continuity, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, right.
Because you don't want 2021 to be written off as an adjustment year.
Adjusting to the new guy.
You can't waste those years.
Yeah.
I think you take care of it now before it's too late.
So let's say they let him go through this season and through the next season. And next season we don't get even a wild card.
Right.
Right.
They're 500.
Or something like that. A little bit over 500, whatever. They don't make the wild card. And they do fire him. And then they go to the new guy. But yeah, that's a nice job to get.
Nice job, yeah. Whew. And that is where you'd hire, like, a, I don't know, Ron Garden hire type.
Somebody would. Yeah, I mean, I would think that people would, for 2021, even next year, I think people would be lining up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I know Brojas would love that.
Candidates also.
Oh, yeah.
I guess.
Oh, but yeah, I would
honestly,
think,
if you hire a guy for 2020, I think you'll get the best candidates. Like, people start writing on the wall here.
Oh, 100%. Right. I mean, just look at what our starting rotation is right now. Of those six guys, maybe one, maybe two are going to be in the starting rotation next year.
Maybe,
right? I mean, you got Paddock and maybe Cal.
Maybe
Lauer.
One of Lauer, Lucchesi. There might be three, to be honest, but
maybe. But who knows? I mean, it depends obviously how fast they move Gore.
It's a choice job, though.
Oh,
like,
it's a,
that's a job you take that will make you look good.
Right. Yeah.
That's what everyone wants.
It'll be very interesting to see what he does at the trade deadline to see how he loads it up. Because obviously we're all waiting for Urias to get up here, and we definitely need a center fielder badly.
Yeah.
Ugh.
We'll talk about that in the trade section.
Yes, yes.
The other hot topic has been an ongoing conflict of what do you think about Austin Hedges?
Actually, hold on.
Let's hear what our esteemed beat writer,
Kevin
Acey, wrote on this issue back in April 12th.
Please read the quote.
All right, I'm trying to find it on our text thread.
It was a long text thread, by the way.
Oh, where'd it go? This was the lead of it. Impressive at-bat Thursday against Archie Bradley shows why Austin Hedges has gone from liability to weapon. Now, in that article, Kevin Acey broke down one at-bat by Austin Hedges in early April. I should point out that following this game in which he homered, and ironically enough, Acey chose not to analyze the at-bat where Austin Hedges hit the longest homer in his career. He chose to focus on his fourth at-bat against Archie Bradley, where Austin Hedges saw 11 pitches, ultimately resulting in a line-out to third base. It should be noted that this wasn't a 120-mile-per-hour blistering line drive. It had the 12th highest exit velocity in the game and was just over 100 miles per hour.
By the way, there were two outs in this at-bat, right?
Yes, two outs. Runner on first.
And the runner on first was?
Tatis.
Who was running on
every pitch. There were six pickoff attempts on him in that. Yes. But you're down by one in the late innings. your goal is to get a runner into scoring position, right? I should note that the pitcher spot is up next, but Francisco Mejia has come out on deck.
Is that on deck? Right. Yeah.
And this is still when everyone believed in Francisco Mejia hitting.
Yes.
This was April 12th. Hedges saw 11 pitches, four of which he swung at out of the strike zone. Two of those out of the strike zone were with a full count, meaning that he swung at balls twice that would have been ball four and would have moved Tatis, the fastest runner on the team and best base runner on the team,
into scoring position.
Into scoring position with Francisco Mejia coming up. And wait. Kevin Acey identified this.
Hold on. He started off the at-bat 0-2, right? Didn't he?
Yes, 0-2, including strike two.
The first one was right down the dick, right?
Right down the dick.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Strike two, he swung at a ball,
yes,
shockingly,
right,
out of the strike zone, just not even close to the strike zone. There was one that he held up on another ball out of the strike. He did offer at it, but I think he check-swinged on it. Pitch 10 in the at-bat couldn't have been more down the dick. Like, when you look at the little thing that lights up with what part of the strike zone, you know, it's split into nine quadrants.
Yeah.
It's in the middle quadrant.
Right.
96 miles per hour, right down the middle, and he weakly foul pops it behind him. Yes. This is the at-bat that Kevin Acey has identified as the turning point in Austin Hedges' career, where he goes from glove-first catcher to lethal weapon. I sent you the video today. Did you watch the whole series, right?
I watched it. Oh, yeah.
When you watched that, did you see a lethal weapon up there?
He can't hit. He just can't hit.
Like, if you put Austin Hedges in a box, you'd get arrested for having a concealed weapon, right?
All we want, what would be the, to keep him around and to keep him as the full-time catcher, well, like 75% of the starts, right? Like 230? You'd be happy with that?
Here's the thing. I'm not unhappy with him now.
Well,
he's one of the most valuable players on the team. And I think that if Acey were being honest, or really the media was being honest, and it's something Darren Smith has reasoned many times when we had the pleasure of having him on the air in this city, you don't have to make him into something he's not. Like, he's already good. Like, you can write an article on how and explain why the value of his defense and his framing and his handling of the pitching rotation is valuable enough to offset however bad. Because really, he couldn't hit any worse than he's hitting this year.
No.
Right? And yet
this is the worst by far.
And yet he's still top three in WAR for this team.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I think that's an approachable, truthful article about him.
No,
right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like, he's just never going to be a 270 hitter that hits with power.
No.
He's never going to be a 240 hitter that hits with power, right? I mean,
I would just take 230. I would stop completely.
I'd take 200.
Yeah, right, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got power. Yeah. I mean, Mike Zunino does it, right?
The strikeouts, they're just, it's constant. When he comes up, that's what you expect. You expect a strikeout. You don't expect him to make contact.
So this was on our text thread today. You stayed very quiet for the third part.
I had a lot of stuff going on, but I was enjoying it. Put it that way.
Did you read about my unfounded theory about this organization?
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah.
So this is totally not based on any real evidence. I don't have any sources. I don't have anything to really back it up.
But you have good examples.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like AJ and the organization actively seeks players that are sellout power guys. You can call them three true outcomes, maybe, but they generally don't walk that much. But guys that have a glimmer of just great power, AJ loves those guys. And that can be at the expense of, if they have good OBP, then all the better, but they don't have to have good OBP. I feel like that's like an organizational philosophy of who I've seen them acquire, not only acquire, but then push into tons of playing time.
Well, drop those names that you put on there.
Okay. Players that they've had that fall into this style are players like Ian Kinsler, Freddy Galvis, Carlos Villanueva, Franchy Cordero, Francisco Mejia, Jabari Blash, Ryan Schimpf, Matt Kemp, Derek Norris. It's what many people speculate happened to Luis Urias. Austin Hedges showed a little bit of power, and now he's a sellout for power guy.
Yeah.
It's something, you know, Hunter Renfrow is a sellout for power guy. I'm not going to say that that's necessarily horrible, but I've noticed that that seems to be an overriding philosophy of this team under AJ. Do you notice that at all yourself?
Well, those examples are absolutely perfect.
We have so many guys that hit a home run and nothing else, right?
Like, yeah.
Ian Kinsler has what, 8 home runs now and 14 RBIs?
I think he's
home run or nothing.
Honestly, Carlos Villanueva, the only thing that he's done
home run or nothing.
Yeah.
And they would have stuck with him if they didn't get figured out. Like, we loved him when he was actually hitting the home runs.
Yeah.
And selling out for that power.
And he was also a butcher at third base.
For sure, but it didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
He hit bombs.
Yeah. Right, he was hitting bombs. Yeah, and then it was like, okay, we figured this guy out, and now he's not even in the league.
Like, I think a lot of fans are like, yeah, you know, just give him time. He's going to work on OBP and seeing some more pitches. And my totally unfounded theory is that the team's telling them, no, hit those bombs. Like, don't worry about the other stuff. Just make sure you hit the homers. Yeah. Because from what we see in the players, I don't really, and Matt Stairs, I think, preached more patience with the team. Like, it makes me wonder, like, is the team being shaped philosophically to pursue that? Like, to not only acquire the players that do it, but to teach it to players that we already have?
Well, the numbers don't lie. I mean, when you look at this team, I mean, how many years in a row are we right at the top of strikeouts and right at the very bottom of walks? How many years
point,
in a row is
it doesn't
this?
Become randomness of acquiring personnel that happened to do that, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Isn't it at
it's
least
constant.
Within the realm of possibility that this is an organizational philosophy?
Yeah, no,
and
definitely.
I'm not going to say you can't win with it. Maybe you can.
Maybe.
It's just something that I happen to have noticed lately.
And I haven't looked in the – it's been a couple weeks since I've looked at those numbers as far as the where we're at strikeout-wise and where we're at walk-wise. But it's a pretty good – earlier this year we were, you know, right at the top and right at the bottom like we always are.
And like on Austin
constant.
Hedges specifically, isn't that what he is? He's a guy who's going to hit you some home runs and not do much else.
Right.
And the home runs can
and
win
occasional,
games.
Yeah.
I mean, he's won games with the home runs.
True.
It's not always bad, but it's just – I don't know if you need 8 guys doing that, right?
Yeah, with this year especially, because he's what is he at now, 180 or something like that? I think it's his batting average. Like,
I think it's lower.
It might be lower than 180 now. Oh, my God. But it really, really stands out when you have basically 3 to 4 guys at the bottom of the order that are automatic outs. You already have a pitcher, and our pitchers can't hit dick. And then you have Austin there, and then you have Kinsler there. Sometimes you have Margot there.
He's hitting 184. I was being very unfair to Austin.
That's... You can't have the four out of 9 guys be an automatic out.
No.
It's going to kill you. It will absolutely kill you. And it has. It
5
has.
When Greg Garcia is in the lineup. Like,
yeah. And you know why I like Garcia.
I don't mind him.
Yeah, because at least he can get on base occasionally. He works the count. But a lot of the times, and I think it was... What, last night or the night before, he worked the count to 3-2 and then struck out looking.
But
he doesn't.
But
so much.
If you listen to our announcers, that has a lot of value.
Yeah, at least all I can say, at least he's seen pitches.
Yeah.
I think he still has more RBI than Kinsler does, which is pretty incredible.
So, are we good with the Hedges?
Yeah,
is he good enough? I mean, I said, he has the third highest WAR on the team,
and people are, you know, they bitch about the framing thing and that framing's horse shit and blah, 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 blah.
You're talking about Marver.
There's more than Marver that say it. And I get what they're saying, but they're looking for this perfect world where we have umpires that aren't shit.
And there's not a union ensuring that the umpires will keep doing what they're doing.
Right, we have this is the hand that we're dealt right now. So that's the game you play with. And umpires are shit. And if Austin can take advantage of that, awesome. I want a guy who can do that. And all catchers should be trying to learn how to take advantage of dumb umpires. And he does. I don't think you can give him shit about that at all. That's it. It's He's great at it. He really is.
Like any other loophole.
It's a loophole. Exactly.
If
and until they close it.
You don't want to take advantage of a loophole? That's fine. But I'm going to take
that.
Advantage.
We should be taking advantage of everything we can get.
Yeah.
You know, we have a catcher who is the best at that. And we're still 2 games under .500. Yeah. So we need to be taking advantage of everything that we possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah. I'm fine. To be honest, I'm fine with him.
I just wish he would take
I'm very frustrated with
more
his
pitches.
At-bats.
Yeah.
I don't think he will ever be a good hitter.
No, he's not good.
But I've come to terms with that.
Yeah, the other thing is also with I feel when he does get up that and somebody is on base, Andy should be okay with having Hedges with treating him basically like a pitcher and having him bunt somebody over and then you have, you know, just move the runner instead of another strikeout. Move the runner.
Yeah.
Just move
especially
the runner.
Especially when you know there's a pinch hitter coming up. Because
yeah,
usually he's hitting eighth.
Especially then.
I mean, if it's Cal Quantrill coming up to hit next, like, I get it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, but...
But if you are going to do that, if you are taking that person, that pitcher out, which, you know, he's doing quite a bit, you just have to bunt.
Because the strikeout is the worst result.
It's
right
the worst... It's just an out and nothing moves. It's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's been a couple times in the last couple weeks where I've just been going, just bunt him, man. Come on. I know you want to show confidence in your guy and all that, but he's not going to hit it.
Right.
He's not going to. So, you're right.
So we've talked about possible moves that might be made. We're, let's see, a month and a half from the trade deadline. And we learned in our show prep today that there is no more waiver trade month in August, the period where Kevin Towers said the real deals are found. So that means that July 31st is it.
That's it. Yeah.
It's hard to say what the Padres will do because we don't really know what their team's record is going to be, like whether they're making a push or not. But there's certainly players on this roster that, regardless of how the team is doing, need to be moved in some way or another, whether that means trading them or sending them down, or there's a lot of roster shuffling coming up. Of course, that's somewhat alleviated by the just suicidal news that Franchy Cordero is hurt.
Which we still don't know about.
It's been almost a day, and there's been no comment on it, which to me doesn't sound great, because if it was nothing, the Padres are always all too happy to say, it's nothing, he'll be here tomorrow, or maybe he'll take one day off.
He's fine. Right? Yeah, he'll be back in a couple days.
Total silence means that they're running MRIs, and there's all kinds of stuff going on.
They're trying to figure out how to reattach his arm.
Yeah, a lot worse than tweaking his hamstring or whatever.
Yeah, right, yes.
So... Taking him out of the conversation for a second, there are guys coming back, like in the are already pretty crowded outfield. Jankowski supposedly is working out.
So he's got a couple weeks because he's going to obviously have to go do a rehab.
Who knows with the Padres, right?
Yeah. But he'll have to go do a rehab, or he'll go to El Paso for a couple weeks or a week or something like that.
And then they got to make room for him. I mean, the obvious choice is to send Margot down, who just was infuriating yesterday with runners on base in the top of the ninth inning. The Padres are actually putting together a rally against Will Smith, one of the better closers in baseball, and he weakly pops out to second, which is classic Margot, right?
Classic Margot. He just can't hit.
Yeah.
He just can't hit.
He's got a jello arm. Like, there's all kinds of issues with Miguel Margot.
He's weird at the wall. Like, he's a good defensive center fielder, but when he gets to the wall, he gets weird.
He's just not the guy. He doesn't look like the guy,
no,
right?
He's not.
And, like, we're at the phase of this team where you need to have the guy, or you need to know whether you have the guy.
We've got to get a good center fielder.
How much bigger we gotta get a vet, sample something. Size do we need on Margot at this point?
I've defended him over and over and over.
But he doesn't get on base.
Nope.
And he's another guy who got a little taste of power, right? And the assumption is, well, he just developed that power, right? I watched him that season and thought, I don't know, he's kind of selling out for power, it seems like. Like, he's now trying to hit home runs.
Yeah.
And he came back to earth after that, and if you remember the story last year was that his terrible first half, the team just let happen. I think Matt Stairs was like, yeah, I saw it, but, like, I let him fail enough that he was willing to take instruction, which to me is a awkward and interesting way to teach those skills. But right. To just flush half a season down the toilet to
Yeah, so now they're going to, their talk has been that they're going to send him down to go work on the swing.
Again.
So are they going to send him down to El Paso so he goes down there and hits 15 home runs?
He's like, well, this works. I'm going to do this at the major leagues. And like, these are the kinds of things that, again, totally unfounded, make me wonder if someone got like chum in the water. AJ was like, whoa, Manny's hitting home runs all of a sudden. Like, let's work with him and develop that power.
Yeah.
And then that turns into Manny thinking he's a power hitter. Like, it's, I don't know. Again, totally unfounded.
Right.
But
who knows?
It's like kind of a pattern when you start looking at a lot of these players and some of the issues that they've had.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah, I'm.
And the thing with Manny is he never got on base. He always OBP'd like 300. He wasn't a leadoff guy. He was bad at it because he didn't get on base. Like, he's a good backup.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's a good backup. He's a good defensive replacement for because all the rest of the guys are all
so
grizzly bears on skate.
This is probably controversial.
Skates out there.
I've certainly criticized Will Myers before, but he's not that bad in center field. He's not good, but he at least with him, honestly, I think he's certainly better than he was in 2015, that first month in April, where he was literally historically terrible. I kind of look at Will in center field, and I'm like, maybe we can work with this.
Yeah, okay, maybe if you remember, yeah,
enough. Even though he's striking out, God knows how many times this year, he's like OPSing over 700.
Right.
He's getting on base with the walks.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's better than, to me, he's better, a better option than Margot at center field.
100%. Yeah. And at spring training, I was so against it.
Me too.
So against
because
it.
I remember 20, like, I can't stress how awful he was in 2015.
Yeah, right. I just wanted Will. Will seems like the type of guy that you just go, okay, look, you're in left field. That's what you're going to do. Okay. Just concentrate on that and we'll deal with you later. It's all good. But Margot can't do it. He's not the guy for center. So
he's good at playing center field, but he's not good enough where you're like, it doesn't matter. Like,
remember
Peter Borjos in his prime? Like, he was so good at playing center field, it didn't matter that he couldn't hit.
Margot's not
He's not that good.
No, he's not that good. No. So if when a lineup comes out now, I'm like, yeah, I want to see Will in center. So it's like
there's no one else in the system
to
play it.
No,
like, to me, it's like,
I mean, except for Franchi, and now we don't know what's going on with Franchi.
But he actually is bad at playing center.
Over. Yeah,
he actually is really bad at playing center
field. He's just like super athletic that you still think, okay, he could get better at this. He could get better at this. But I mean, our outfield is so bad. Renfro in left, Myers in center, Franmil in right. That's bad. When you do when you have Naylor in left, Naylor is a butcher in
He's
left
bad.
Field.
I always enjoy when I'm seeing like
so bad.
People
he
on Twitter
hit.
And they're like,
the kick
Naylor's
hit.
Not
hit.
That bad.
It's,
he's
no,
that
no.
bad.
He's that bad and then a little bit more. He's terrible in left field. Last night that ball that went between him Tatis. It went between him and Tatis.
Yeah.
I mean, that there terrible.
Was a,
the throw wasn't good. I mean, Kinsler still should have caught the goddamn thing. But
there was a line drive that got turned into a double because Naylor is so slow and took a bad route on it, where any other left fielder could have gotten in front of it to hold it to a single.
Yeah.
And Naylor just misplayed it and it went all the way to the wall.
Yeah.
And it was probably the eighth or seventh
He's
inning,
terrible.
I think.
He's terrible. He honestly makes Renfro look good in left.
Yeah. Well, Renfro...
Renfro's improved.
By the metrics, one of the best outfielders in baseball this
Renfro's
year.
Improved. He has improved. At the beginning of the year, it was bad, though. You got to admit.
Sure.
I mean, remember that game in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Will has blunders, too.
Oh, you know.
But so does Margot.
Will takes the worst routes.
Is it this season that Margot olayed on a like a ground ball up
yes,
the middle?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
There's bloopers for everyone. But Will Myers right now is perfectly league average hitting. He's striking out 37% of the time. He's hitting like 220.
He has those bad slumps that really make it look
bad. But even with
the
slumps, he's at 100 WRC plus. That means he's exactly league average at hitting. And he's almost neutral at fielding center field. So
it's better than Margot.
I think it's better than Margot. I'm not even complaining anymore. Like
no.
Part of me says he's the center fielder for next year, too.
So is the idea
they're not going to trade him. They tried.
So the idea is to send Margot down to AAA and then let him rake down there. And people will look and go, oh, God, this guy was a top prospect that was a major trade piece in a blockbuster trade. Maybe, yeah, the Padres are fucking this guy up.
Right.
Let's grab him. So
send him down, bring Jankowski up to be the late-inning defensive replacement.
And by the way,
who's actually a better fielder than Margot.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
And gets on base,
can steal.
You need a late-inning defensive replacement with these outfielders, right?
Right.
So there he is. And he can play center, too. So,
well, the main reason we need Jankowski back is so that Mud and Don can do one of the games from the beach.
Of course.
Right? I mean, that's the whole point of this
because
deal.
This is our source of entertainment. Look, we're headed down the highway where our announcer's shenanigans is our source of entertainment going forward. Do you remember last year how excited we got for Brett Kennedy? It was Brett Kennedy Day. That's where we were in the season. At some point, we're going to be like, hey, guys, it's Lake Batcher Day. He just got called up. It's Jerry Keel Day.
Honestly, you know, Fox Sports San Diego would probably do, okay, hey, you know what? We're scheduling this game, blah, blah, blah. This is where it's going to be Mud. It's going to be Don. They're going to be out on the beach where they're going to do this thing and the other. And then Andy would sit Jankowski. He was like, he needs a day.
He needs a blow.
That's the kind of dick he is, that he would pull some shit like that. Like sitting Tatis on a Saturday night where they're handing out awful beach towels.
Where they have an off day on Monday. Like sitting Manny on the Sunday.
Oh, my God. I had just bought my tickets. I literally had just bought my tickets, and 30 minutes later that drops that he's sitting.
And then the next day he's at a winery. Furious. And you're like, he's getting enough rest.
Yeah, he's fine. He played two games.
Scarecrow bottles are like $300 a bottle, and he's drinking them.
Two games he played. And then he's off on Monday. Jesus. Oh, I was furious. Oh,
this is why you should just watch the games on TV.
Oh, I know. I love going to the park, though.
Yeah. Go on weeknights. Those are the best days.
They really are. I know.
Weekday,
I know.
Weeknights.
Weekdays are the best. Yeah. Weekdays are the best. The Wednesday day games. And they have one coming up, by the way, with Milwaukee. I think I'm going to try to go to that. But, oh, I love those. Those are my faves.
Last hot topic.
Okay.
What do you do with Kirby Yates? He's been incredible this year.
He's
at peak value. The even the underlying statistics back up that he's for real this season. He'll be 33 starting next season.
I can't remember who on Twitter was talking about this, and they made the excellent point about Yates, and that it's not a question of do you trade him or do you not trade him. It's just basically a question of what are you going to get back. And if you're going to get back somebody that's really going to impact this team for a long time, like if we could get a stud center fielder somehow, I think you have to do that.
Isn't that the case with any player? I mean, never trade Tatis. But if someone offered us Ozzy Albies and Ronald Acuna, wouldn't we say yes?
I mean, you listen, obviously, on everything. Obviously, Tatis is a guy that's 20, and you want to keep him here because everybody loves him.
But there are players.
Yates isn't in that ballpark at all for anyone. Oh, well, of course.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but like Yates is – they got him for literally nothing. He's at peak value right now. If you can really get a great haul back, I think you have to do it. And – as far as this year, it's like, well, who's going to close this year? I don't really give a fuck who closes this year.
I don't either.
This year,
bullpen's already blowing.
This year doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
I will say, I don't think there's an internal candidate necessarily to take over closer.
People are saying Trey. No.
I think people see guy that throws hard and thinks he's a closer.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But like I said.
But how many of those guys do we have? Stock?
Yeah.
Trey?
But the thing is, there's two things you don't want from a closer. Someone who unnecessarily puts runners on, and someone that gives up home runs. Because those are the two things that will most easily and quickly lead to blown saves.
Yes.
That's why Kirby has been so great, because he's striking out like 16 people a game, and he's not walking it. Or 16 per 9, and he's not walking anyone.
Teams must be salivating watching him. When he goes out, it's over. it is over. But and there are some teams out there that could put him at the back end, and wow. For the
look,
Twins.
With anything you do, though, you discount for risk, right? I mean, any investment, really. And when you have a 32-year-old player, it's not just that we can't be 100% sure that he repeats. I mean, many relievers fall off a cliff. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Craig Stammen was, for whatever he's done this year, was really great the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes it disappears. How many closers, like people that play fantasy baseball, like you cycle through so many closers through the years that seem unhittable for a year and then disappear.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just goes. And then you add in an injury risk, which I don't know what his injury history is, but he's getting older and he throws hard and has a lot of movement on his pitches. Like maybe, I'm not saying it's likely, but it's something you factor in.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to. Yeah. At his age, definitely. Yeah.
So to me, like you cash that in. Like, right. The goal isn't to, and honestly, people are like, well, we got to make our wild card run next year. I'm all for a wild card run, but is it worth sacrificing the World Series run of 2022 or whenever that's going to be?
No.
To push for the wild card in 2020, right? And the goal, I would assume, is not to pick up 18-year-old Dominicans out of a trade.
No, right.
It's to pick up pieces that will be helpful for the World Series run.
Yeah. If he goes out and he gets a haul of absolute studs that are single A guys, then that's not really going to...
Right.
That's not going to fly. But if he's got young players that can make an impact quickly, maybe not this year, but maybe even next year, yeah, you have to.
I just don't see how you can say, no, we can't possibly trade him.
You can't say that.
And we're not saying he's bad. Like,
no! Oh my God.
He's anything but bad.
Right. That's the whole reason. It's like those contenders are going to... He can be a real game changer, make a major, major difference for somebody that is somebody that can get in and maybe not get far into the playoffs. But with him, they're looking at possibly winning a World Series.
Yeah.
They'll give up a lot for that.
I see coming in this discussion sometimes is like, well, why don't we just sign him to a team-friendly extension? And I'm like, if you do that, then you're assuming he's going to be just as good next year, or at least really, really good next year, right?
Right.
Kirby Yates has never had a payday. Like, he's 33 and he's still in arbitration, and he really doesn't get paid that much in arbitration because he wasn't that good his first few years. You don't think he's going to test the market as the elite closer in this scenario?
He's got to get paid at some
point. His one payday, even if it's a two-year, $20 million contract.
Yeah.
Like, you think he's going to sign Brad Hand's $15 million, like, four-year deal? There's no way he's doing that.
No. He's got to get paid at some point. Yeah. And especially at his age. Yeah.
It's his one payday. Like, he wants to live in Kauai. It's expensive there.
No shit. Oh,
you think he wants to make arbitration dollars? Like,
right. To live in his apartment.
Yeah,
and
discount it so he can live in, like...
No, yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's got to get paid. He has to.
I that stuff doesn't even play in the equation for me. Like, he's under contract this year and next. That's it. That's the value he has.
Yeah. A huge value for somebody that's contending this year, and then knowing that, and if you are a team that is that good, you're probably going to be very good next year as well, and now you have this guy who's an absolute stud.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot more failure stories of older relievers signed to big contracts that fail than there are ones that are successes. Jonathan Papelbon was people talked about as a Hall of Famer at one point, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
He signed his, I think it was a four-year contract with the Phillies.
Lights out, dude.
Done.
Lights out.
He's done after that, though.
Yeah, right.
It went away in a flash.
Yeah.
Never got it back.
Yeah.
Sometimes it disappears like that. Like,
it does. Yeah, right.
Not saying it will or is likely to happen with Kirby, but it's at least some percentage chance that it will.
He could be a stud for the next four seasons. Who knows? But this is peak trade value time. And if somebody puts a huge load in front of Preller, he's going to grab it. And you have to.
I heard he loves big loads.
He does love big. Who doesn't love big loads?
So, real fast, just to sum it up, he's... I'm pulling up the schedule here.
Oh, okay.
They've got a big series against Colorado coming up.
Yes.
It made me laugh because Andy Green was like, yeah, the next upcoming games are real big for us. And I noticed he selected like games against bad teams. Like they're playing the Orioles and the Giants and the Rockies. And
what is the Orioles series?
He's not going to say that.
I want to know that. But if Cashner beats us, then they should fire Green right after the game.
Okay, so in the immediate future, they've got
Colorado, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee's good.
Yes. Right? Oh, yeah. Yelich is going to hit like
Pittsburgh is good still.
A dozen home runs. You saw what we did with them at home. That was not good.
Oh, they're not good. Never mind. They're 30 and 38 now. So
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think they were good when they were here. They had a winning record.
But that was just a few weeks ago.
Well,
and they,
I guess now we saw their true skill.
Well, I don't know.
And then we play the Orioles after that. They go from Pittsburgh to Baltimore. So this is the easy part of the schedule because I think we talked about this last podcast, but there is a stretch later on that gets really difficult. So these are like the Giants series. That was a series they were supposed to bank some wins for. Like if they can't make it through this up to Baltimore, which ends on June 26th, in some kind of position, it's probably over.
Is Baltimore here or
at Baltimore?
It's at Baltimore,
in front of the 10,000 fans that they'll have.
Yeah, it'd be hot as shit.
Yeah,
ugh.
Tuesday, Wednesday, one day game. No, one day game there. So after that, then it starts getting tough because they've got like they've got the Cardinals, the Dodgers, 4-game series, Atlanta, Cubs.
So they're going to fire him after the Baltimore series, and then Barajas has to go against all the best teams in the league to prove himself.
Good. I like bringing a challenge. That's what we should want.
That is a challenge. I would like for him to be able to get his feet wet on the shitty teams, but...
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You got to be tested by fire.
It can't be perfect. It can't be perfect.
I heard Rod Barajas doesn't back down from anything. They're like, Barajas, I don't know if it's sensible for you to carry a roadie out to the bus. There's cameras out there. And he's like, I don't care. It's Give me my Modelo.
The red solo.
Pour the Modelo.
It is the best picture ever. And his...
He's
all sloppy, and the suit is all over the place, and he just looks like the happiest guy ever.
Great. I love it.
Don't you just want to go eat and drink with that guy all night long?
He's the coaching version of Fran Milreyes.
Seriously.
I want to give him a big hug.
Oh, he'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when they're doing the song at the beginning of the game, like Rod, you feel, would like be right in the middle of that shit.
Hey, didn't Andy write choreography for that to help... help build team chemistry.
He is known for that. He is known for his choreography.
He's like, hey, guys, I'm a big fan of Whitney Houston. I picked this out. Here's some dance steps. Let's do a quick run through in the clubhouse, and then let's go out to the dugout. And I think this is really going to bring you guys together.
Oh, my God. He's whiter than I am.
God, he orchestrates everything, Andy Green.
Oh, God.
Well, we've said it all.
Have we?
Yeah. All we've got now is to go into a possibly terrible series in Colorado.
They're going to prove us wrong, aren't they?
Yeah. Hey, what do you have to say to Leisure Fryer, who's going to be undoubtedly disappointed that you're on this podcast while Marver is busy being a dad?
He won't even hear this. He won't even hear
because
he'll start it and then go, oh, God, it's just Corey, and then he'll go
I'm
right
I'm
going
to lie on the show notes and say that Marver's here.
Just to make Leisure listen
to
it?
Just to make dumb Leisure listen to it.
And by the way, Marver, congratulations.
Of course, congratulations.
Congratulations. He created a child.
He stole the name of his child from Woe Doctor.
It's
already an uncommon name, Isaac, that he stole from our beloved friend and fellow co-host, Woe Doctor.
Wow. Shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah. But typical, though, right?
It's hard to hold him responsible for his behavior. It could be the methane. It's difficult to say.
It could be.
You know as well as anyone how it can affect your thinking and cognitive.
I'm right in there. Yeah. I'm right in there.
I mean, you play it safe and wear a gas mask around the house, but I've seen Marver in his domicile, and I know he does not wear oxygen or a gas mask.
It's just gas mask and boxers. That's my life as I work at home.
For someone so supposedly successful, I noticed Marver Manor wasn't even fitted with an oxygen system or a way to seal out the methane from this outside inhabitable environment. Like I know you did
that poor child.
At the Stewart household.
That poor child.
Have invested in that kind of ventilation.
of course.
At Marver's house, it's just...
The technology's there.
It's dangerous. Yeah, the technology's there if you have the money.
That poor child.
Yeah.
It's called CPS already?
I hope nobody calls CPS. Please don't call CPS as a result of this. There is some research that the human body can adapt to inhospitable environments, so it may be possible that Marver's child Isaac could become a methane boy, like a new mutation,
like,
or
gills or something like that. Does that?
We can't be sure.
We can't be sure. We can't be sure. But anyway, congratulations, Marver.
Congratulations, Marver. Great
to you and your lovely bride.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Well, for another edition of the Gwintelligence podcast, go Padres.
Go Padres.